Hello, America, and to our friends around the world. Welcome to the Common Sense Show. I'm Dave Hodges, the host. We are the show that's freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time, coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And if you don't think they can take all your money from you, Dodd-Frank 2010 says they can. UCC Code Section 8 says they can. My family lost everything in 1929 on my mom's side. Don't get caught in that trap. Let Noble Gold bail you out. I've been a customer for 8 years. Here's what you do. You call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Tell them I told you to call. Don't let the grass grow into your feet. Lots going on. Our guest is Nick Bryant, back for a return visit. I first interviewed Nick, oh gosh, I think it's probably been about 15 years ago on the Franklin scandal.
Back
And
in the Jurassic period, I think.
there you go, my friend. And so Nick has come back. We're going to talk about the Epstein list. And with all that's happening, the tragic event of Charlie Kirk, and my heart's broken over this. We can't let this story die. This has profound implications. And if our justice system means anything, we need to bring pressure to bear to have perp walks taking place. Nick, welcome back to the show. Really good to have you back. I'm in a kind of a loss on where to start when you got the FBI director saying that Epstein trafficked to nobody. Are you kidding me?
At one point, he does say Epstein, the Epstein network. So
Yeah, I know.
I haven't dealt with a lot of crackheads, but I guess that they lack veracity. He kind of reminded me of like a crackhead. I tweeted, I mean, his lies are just so disingenuous. I mean, it's like he's a crackhead.
I know.
And then someone tweeted back to me, well, that's an insult to crackheads.
Oh, I know. I hear you. Okay. I guess the basic general question is this: is there a real and bona fide Epstein list?
Well, when we say Epstein list, it's not like Jeffrey Epstein ran the Jeffrey Epstein travel agency and he put all the perps on a piece of paper and hung them or and put them on his refrigerator with a magnet. That's not how it works. I released a copy of the Black Book in 2015, and I believe that many of the perpetrators are in that Black Book. And then I also released the logs, the flight logs, and I believe that many of the perpetrators were on those planes too. So the FBI has more than enough evidence to start indicting people. And Massey named 19 people yesterday that he felt had been part of the Jeffrey Epstein network. And for the FBI and Department of Justice to say that Jeffrey Epstein didn't had no co-conspirators. That is such an egregious lie that I think that they think that we're stupid. I mean, to come up with such a disingenuous lie that Jeffrey Epstein had no co-conspirators is pretty crazy.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And they do think we're that stupid. I see evidence of that every day. Are there names that you're more comfortable saying, I'm pretty sure this guy's on the list, or I know he's on the list?
Alfredo Rodriguez was Jeffrey Epstein's house manager, and he stole the Black Book, and he tried to sell it to an attorney who was representing some of the Epstein victims, and the attorney called the FBI. The FBI did a sting and impounded the Black Book, and ultimately, the Black Book ended up with me because it was given to me by one of the attorneys that represents the Epstein victims. And Rodriguez circled a number of names that he said were in pedophilic cahoots with Jeffrey Epstein. And then there's the sworn testimony of Virginia Giuffre in the Maxwell case, where she names a number of perpetrators.
There you go.
So the first person that's circled by Rodriguez is Ghislaine Maxwell. And Virginia Giuffre named her as a perpetrator. The second guy who circled is Jean-Luc Brunel, and he ran a modeling agency with Epstein, and he was continually bringing in underage girls from Eastern Europe. And from what I understand, they were buying girls. They weren't renting them, they were actually buying them. So Rodriguez circled his name, and Virginia Gufrin named him as a perpetrator. And I can safely assume, I think that we can safely assume that Ghislaine Maxwell and Jean-Luc Brunel are perpetrators. Actually, there was a 60 Minutes piece on Jean-Luc Brunel many years ago, and many of these models qualified or talked about his predatory habits. So I think we can safely say that those two, we have double corroboration on those two. We've got Alfredo Rodriguez and we got Virginia Gufrin. Now, Rodriguez also circled Les Wexner, the L Brands potentate and billionaire, and Virginia Gufrin said that she'd been molested by him. And Rodriguez circled Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel and actually the former head of military intelligence for Israel. And Virginia Gufrin said that she'd been molested by him. And Rodriguez circled Alan Dershowitz, and Virginia said that she'd been molested by him. And Rodriguez circled Bill Richardson. He was the former New Mexico governor, and he was a high flyer in the Democratic Party, and he was actually Clinton's energy czar. And Virginia said that she'd been molested by him. So I think that those six would definitely be a good start. And when I think of perpetrators that can also be indicted, the New York Times published an article in 2019, and it named six procurers or pimps, whatever terminology you want to use. And one was Ghislaine Maxwell. I think that we can pretty much agree on that. She was. The other one was Sarah Kellen. And Sarah Kellen, Ghislaine Maxwell built the machine that scooped up all these little girls. And Sarah Kellen was her lieutenant, her right-hand woman. And Leslie Groff and Adriana Ross were also really integral into that for running that machine. And so was Nadia Marcinkova. And not only has the New York Times written an article about it, Politico wrote an article about it, naming these perpetrators. And if we really wanted justice, what we would do is we could slap Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, Adriana Ross, and Nadia Marcinkova with multiple counts of child trafficking, which is a heavy sentence in the federal system. It's 15 to life. And then when they're looking at the rest of their life in prison, they would roll over on the perps. And we've got more than enough victims to come forward and talk about the perps. We don't even need, although there's a tremendous amount of evidence, a tremendous amount of documentation, we just need these women to roll over on the perps. And then the girls who are now young women or women who were molested by them to come forward and testify in a court of law. I mean, that's it. It could, this whole thing, if the Department of Justice and the FBI had the will, we could probably have this whole thing resolved in 3 months.
So why is, well, I guess I have to ask, what is Trump's role? And if he's indeed sincere about proceeding with this, why is he meeting with so much resistance?
If you look at Kash Patel testified before the House yesterday, and a number of representatives poked holes in his cover story. And actually, it was really it was a very disingenuous performance at best. And but this thing started with the Trump administration in February of this last year, February 26, when Pam Bondi came on national television. She said, "We are going to release the Epstein documents." And at that point, the Epstein documents and the Epstein list were synonymous. And then she released stuff that was already in the public record. I released more incriminating information in 2015 than the Department of Justice did in 2025 when I put the black book and flight logs on the internet. And then I saw, okay, so when we put the black book on the internet, we redacted the numbers of the adults. And then under massages, there's a number of victims. So we redacted their last names and we also redacted their numbers. And then I saw my version of the black book that Pam Bondi released, and every name was redacted. So, I mean, but
Why release it? I mean, you're releasing nothing.
now, this is my thoughts on this. I think that the Trump administration, because Trump had said offered transparency on this case, I think the Trump administration thought it could open Pandora's box ever so slightly and then quickly shut it. Bush and Robert or Gonzalez, his attorney general, made Alberto Gonzalez made the Pandora's box. They were the ones that gave the sweetheart deal to Epstein. Obama didn't touch Pandora's box. Biden didn't touch Pandora's box. And Trump didn't touch Pandora's box in his first term. But his administration thought that they could open Pandora's box ever so slightly and close it quickly. But once you open Pandora's box, the curse comes out. It's like the toothpaste coming out of the tube. It's not coming back. And then after Bonnie released the Nothing Sandwich, she said that she'd been bamboozled by the FBI field office in New York. And then she said that she had a truckload of evidence. So apparently, maybe she's trusting the FBI field office at this point. But then she said something very strange. She said only matters related to national security will be redacted from the Epstein documents. And now she has to tell us what a bunch of child molesters have to do with national security. I mean, she keeps digging herself. And I think the crescendo of her mendacity was that they were just looking that the FBI and Department of Justice were looking at all the gigabytes that were taken out of Epstein. So there was a lot of child abuse material in Jeffrey Epstein's safe. The New York Times reported on multiple disks, and Business Insider reported on hard drives. So, and the government said there was over 300 gigabytes, which I agree with. But she said that they were vetting all that material. And the first thing the FBI did after Epstein was arrested in 2019, they opened up his safe. And his safe was, it was huge. It had the dimensions of like a closet. And I mean, to insinuate that all that material taken out of Jeffrey Epstein's safe has been sitting in some corner of the FBI collecting dust for the last 6 years is really ridiculous, to the point of absurd.
They think we have the attention span of a child, so that I think they can get away with it just based on sweeping it under the carpet and moving it down the road. I want to look at Congress for a second. What it was with one vote, I think, kept the House from revealing a list, and the Senate blocked disclosure entirely. What does that tell you?
Well, there was a rider put on a bill in the Senate that would have instigated a Jeffrey Epstein investigation, and it was voted down 51 to 49. And then we saw the same slim margin in the House regarding Massey's bill that would have mandated an investigation. What's interesting is the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, he has also dug himself into a deep hole. He adjourned the House so it couldn't vote on Massey's bill. And there is some, and then he said that Donald Trump was an FBI informant for Epstein, and then he walked that back. So he's been caught and marginalized too. What's very strange, I find this very strange. I mean, you might not find it strange, your audience might not find it strange, but he's got an app on his phone called Covenant Eye. And his 17-year-old son has an app on his phone called Covenant Eye. And that gives them the ability to monitor each other's consumption of pornography, which is very strange to do that with your 17-year-old son. I think it's strange. Do you think that's strange?
Okay. I'm actually in shock hearing this.
So I think that there's something seriously wrong with Mike Johnson. Now, if he does have a porn addiction and he's into macabre porn or child abuse images, that would make him highly susceptible to being blackmailed.
Yes, of course.
And with the cyber technology that the NSA has at its disposal, it could easily find out where Mike Johnson has been in his internet odysseys.
This reminds me of your book, The Franklin Scandal. Very much so, in terms of the blackmail, compromising of people. And that's, listen, am I surprised? I guess I'm shocked on one hand, but on the other hand, I'll tell you my perception, just body language, mannerisms, and inconsistencies in action. Mike Johnson, I look at him as a little weasel that can't be trusted. I mean, that's my initial reaction to him.
I would categorically agree with you on that. Dennis Hastert was the Speaker of the House. Mike Johnson has the third most, constitutionally, the third most powerful position in our government. The Speaker of the House, if the president is taken out or becomes, can't perform his duties, then it's the vice president. And then if something happens to the vice president, it's the Speaker of the House.
Right.
Dennis Hastert was the Speaker of the House from 1999 to 2016. He was one of the longest speakers of the House ever. And he had child molestation going back 40 years. And Sybil Edmonds, who's an FBI whistleblower, said that the FBI was cognizant of Hastert and his shadow life while he was Speaker of the House. And what's interesting about Hastert is when he And he was making millions of dollars off of his lobbying after he'd been Speaker of the House. And one of his victims was blackmailing him. And he was making these withdrawals. And the FBI got involved. And instead of going after the blackmailer, it went after Hastert. And I've said this before about blackmail. I got to a blackmail photographer when I was writing the Franklin scandal, and I was trying to get my head around it all because no really books, most, I think that the Franklin scandal delineates it the best. I said, how does this work? And he said, once you're compromised, it's like you're on a yacht and it's a beautiful yacht and it's a beautiful day and you can have anything you want on the yacht. But if you decide to get off the yacht, the people on the yacht are going to make sure that you drown. So for some reason, Hastert decided to get off the yacht, and my surmise on that is that he got too greedy. He was not sharing the spoils of his lobbying business. That's just my surmise. But if the FBI really wanted to shut that whole thing down, it would have went after one of the victim that was blackmailing him and said, if you continue to blackmail Dennis Hastert, we're going to put you away forever. I mean, it could have the FBI easily could have taken that tack instead of going after Hastert for illegal transactions.
That's wow, what a weave. I know about Hester a lot, but he was still able to escape. It's like this is the crime they don't want to expose. Have you traced this to its roots? Control, who's really behind it? CIA, Mossad, just as an example of potential controllers. Have you looked at that?
Of course, and I believe that the CIA was behind the Franklin scandal. There were two primary pimps, Lawrence King and Craig Spence, and they flew kids all around the country. They let their power broker friends molest them. Spence had a house that was wired for audiovisual blackmail, and he was a CIA asset. And when I say CIA, I'm not saying everybody in the CIA. There's good people in the CIA. I truly believe that there's good people in the CIA. But there is a dark, malignant corner of the CIA that perpetrates crimes like blackmail with children. I believe that. And I saw there's so much. If you look at the Franklin abuse allegations on Wikipedia, it's nonsensical. And editors have taken over that page and they will not let anyone make any sense out of it whatsoever. I've talked to other editors and we've tried. I even called Jimmy Wales, who turned out to be a snake, but we cannot make, and the reason why that is because that dark, malignant corner of the government is controlling that Wikipedia page, and it wants to make sure that the Franklin scandal and its truth doesn't come out because it is about an intelligence operation that's trafficking children, very, very much like Jeffrey Epstein's.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. But I just wonder,
And
we get down to the core. I mean, I can see why, excuse me, some entity would want to control this for blackmail purposes, for the purposes of bending and manipulating political power and the movement of money. I'm just at kind of a loss to explain. I know the CIA is doing it, but I mean, do they represent somebody? Is it the CIA as its own power broker? I mean, what do you think, Nick?
well, I think that there's obviously very wealthy people involved. In 1991, Les Wexner, who Alberto Rodriguez circled and who Virginia Giuffre named as a perpetrator, he gave Jeffrey Epstein the keys to his kingdom. He gave Jeffrey Epstein power of attorney over every penny he had of the billions of dollars. And Leon Black, oh, and I should. The reason, according to Vanity Fair, now Vanity Fair is a fairly sophisticated magazine, but according to Vanity Fair, and I'm not making this up, as crazy as this sounds, Vanity Fair said that Les Wexner gave Jeffrey Epstein power of attorney over his billions because he was lonely. You can't make something like that up. And Leon Black, the billionaire who's also been implicated with Epstein, excuse me, gave Jeffrey Epstein $160 million. And the reason why Leon Black gave Jeffrey Epstein $160 million is because Jeffrey Epstein was helping him with his taxes. So,
It's not even a believable story.
I mean, Leon Black was the chairman of Apollo, which is one of the largest hedge funds in the world. I mean, he's got f a battalion of accountants, a battalion of accountants. So I initially thought, you have to excuse me, I've got a cold. I initially thought that this was all blackmail. And I've kind of concluded that I believe that Wexner and Leon Black are on the yacht, no doubt. But I also believe that Epstein was laundering money for the CIA. And that's why he was given these massive amounts of money, because it was ill-begotten. And he was, and that's, I believe that's where his expertise was, other than molesting girls and pandering them to be molested by his buddies. I think he was able to wash money. I think that was his one of his preeminent skills.
That is, it's interesting you'd say that. I've seen a parallel approach to laundering with the cartels in Arizona involving politicians and judges. And it's the work of another gentleman, a former RICO investigator. And I've seen the same exact pattern, Nick, that you just described. That, I mean, you hit a chord with me right there. That I agree with that. I'm going to tell you what some people have suggested to me. You've got AIPAC and Mossad involved in, sweetening the pot for people like Chuck Schumer and selected people in Congress. And they do it with, quote, donations, which we know are political bribes. And then I'm wondering if that doesn't work, is it the blackmail from this group that keeps Congress in line that doesn't go against their interests? And perhaps at the root, the Mossad is involved in this.
As people ask me just about every interview whether I think the Mossad was involved. Okay,
Sure.
so, Jeffrey Epstein had a very close relationship with Ehud Barak, and I believe that he pandered underage girls to Ehud Barak.
Okay.
Ehud Barak was the former Israeli prime minister, and he was also formerly the head of his military intelligence for Israel. So there's a profound connection, and they were very good friends. Ehud Barak and Jeffrey Epstein were very good friends, and Jeffrey Epstein gave him a bunch of money for a startup company. And whenever Ehud Barak was in New York, he would stay at the apartment building that was owned by Mark Epstein. And that's where the models were kept also, quote-unquote models. Jeffrey Epstein very well may have been working with the Mossad. I don't deny that at all. But I also believe that I just don't think the CIA is going to let the Mossad compromise American politicians on American soil and not get a cut of that intelligence.
I would agree
That
with that.
that's what I believe.
I totally agree. And that's where it becomes a partnership.
Yes. It's like the Gambino family and the Genovese crime family. I mean, they're both illegal entities, but they've worked out a détente where they can work together and make as much money for themselves as possible because they've realized that if they had if mafia wars costed them a lot of money and a lot of people went to prison. So that's why the mafia has created the commission that's been in business for a very long time, and it makes sure that all five families get along well, and there are certain crimes where they divide the spoils.
And I think this is probably one of them. Do you have an origination time when all these practices started to come into fruition?
The CIA was started in 1947, 1948, and I think political blackmail is something that goes back to the very beginning of our republic. Alexander Hamilton was having an affair with a 23-year-old who was married, and her husband was blackmailing him. And then there was a muckraking journalist who found out about the affair, and he outed Alexander Hamilton having this affair. And he felt Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson had tremendous antipathy towards each other. And the muckraker felt that since he helped out Alexander Hamilton, that Thomas Jefferson owed him an appointment. And Thomas Jefferson didn't give him an appointment. And he outed Thomas Jefferson for having sex with one of his slaves,
Yeah,
Sally Hemings.
Sally Hemings.
And DNA has shown that to be true. So at the very from the nascent inception of our republic, there has been political blackmail.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in terms of really when it gets into Congress and compromises top officials in our government, is there a watershed point in time for in the modern era?
I would think that J. Edgar Hoover probably played a role in that. And
Yeah, I agree.
Ellen Dulles, I mean, when we're talking Ellen Dulles, we're talking about a guy who's an ethical eunuch and just an all-around bad actor. And I could see them, Ellen Dulles, directing people. The CIA has developed various mechanisms to make money. We know that. I mean, from securities fraud to participating in the distribution of drugs. We know that the CIA has done things like this. And The CIA did this because it felt, and I get this from someone who knew William Colby fairly well, who died, who was a former CIA director who died very mysteriously.
Yes.
He said to this person that one of his big regrets was that the CIA started funding mechanisms because they felt, and this was a tenuous time period. Joe Stalin had the hydrogen bomb, or was en route to having the hydrogen bomb. He had the atomic bomb, was en route to having the hydrogen bomb. And Joe Stalin was a guy that had zero, zero love for humanity, and didn't mind genocides because he perpetrated genocides against his own people. So the CIA at that point, I believe, thought that fighting communism was too important to be left to politicians. So it created funding mechanisms and then probably blackmail at that point. And we know that shortly thereafter, it launched Mockingbird, which was its the objective of Mockingbird was to take over the media. And as we can see, there's, according to Business Insider, there's six corporations that own 90% of the media.
Right.
And we just saw something very strange, like Jimmy Kimmel got fired. And the FCC, Disney is a huge conglomerate, and it owns ABC. And the FCC chairman put heat on ABC, and ABC fired Jimmy Kimmel. And I'm not a fan of Jimmy Kimmel, don't get me wrong. I've never watched one of, I've watched snippets of his shows. And I think what he said was in bad taste, but should he get, have been fired for that? Should the Trump administration been able to put that type of pressure on ABC to get someone off the air? I mean,
No. It's interesting. I had this discussion with someone yesterday who's a constitutionalist, and there's no exception to the limits on free speech in the First Amendment that Kimmel violated. His comments, I think, were reprehensible, but he didn't threaten anybody. He wasn't encouraging incitement. There was no perjury involved. I mean, he doesn't meet any of the criteria for censorship. But Nick, I did come across this. I think the company Sinclair, and I'm speaking from memory, but there's a company that owns a lot of the ABC local affiliates, and they were afraid of public backlash. So they said they weren't going to carry the Kimmel show, and that would have cost ABC $6 to $10 million of advertising revenue a week. And so that's what I've heard was really the deciding factor. Although it is true, the FCC chair went on a podcast and said, we're going to go after ABC if they don't get rid of Kimmel. So I don't know which was the deciding factor there.
well, it's pretty egregious. I mean, and I do agree with you. What Jimmy Kimmel said was reprehensible. But I also agree with you that there isn't a sufficient criteria for him to be fired from his show on ABC. And as I've dug into the media, I mean, I've when I started getting into the Franklin scandal in 2002, 2003, and Epstein is more or less a carbon copy of the Franklin scandal, no one in the media wanted to touch it. Nobody. And I could see, and at that point, I could pitch a lot of editors and I could pitch a lot of publishers. I moved out to New York in 1995, and I'd been a freelance journalist ever since. And when I was pitching people, I could almost see the wheels going on and behind their eyes, and they were saying to themselves, they were confronted by some major cognitive dissonance. They were saying to myself themselves, "This is really a horrible story. We should help Nick Bryant break open this story."
Yeah, I hear.
Or I can just write Nick Bryant off as crazy, and I can have a nice dinner with my family tonight. So, and to this day, it amazes me that I have a real hard time getting in on any level of the mainstream media.
As you're right.
Newsmax was interviewing me on Epstein, and actually, they interviewed me a couple of times, and because they saw that I had expertise in it. And then I hadn't heard from him for a while. And I said, do you still want to interview me? And a resounding two-letter word came back. No.
Really? Wonder who was pushing their buttons, because I'll just give you an example, the current story of Charlie Kirk. They are all over this with every conspiracy theory known to man. I mean, their conspiracy theories they're offering up on Newsmax contradict each other. And so I'm thinking, well, I don't think much is out of bounds for them, yet they wouldn't touch your story.
Well, I get into child trafficking covered up by the government, which is aiding and abetting child trafficking. That's very dangerous because that issue can bring the right and the left together. Both the right and the left can agree that children shouldn't be molested with impunity and that the government shouldn't be involved in child trafficking, whether it's a proactive or they're covering it up. So that's a very dangerous topic. And have you seen, Epstein has been with us for quite some time. Have you ever seen a major media outlet call for justice in the Jeffrey Epstein case?
No,
I
no.
never have. I never have.
They've been complicit with every official story that's come out.
And I've been reading Jeffrey Epstein articles for a very long time, and I started investigating him in 2012, and I have never seen the mainstream media say, we need to investigate this. There was a big tranche of Epstein documents dumped about 2.5 years ago, and I was contacted by CNN, and the producer said, since you were the guy that put up the black book and also the flight logs, we'd like you to, and I live in New York City, we'd like you to come in studio and give us some commentary on what you think of this latest document dump. And yeah, as I said, I'd be more than happy to. And at a certain point, I said, I was texting with the producer at this point. I said, since we're talking about Epstein, I'd like a little time to talk about Epstein justice. And I didn't say anything else. I just said, I'd like a little time to talk about Epstein justice. And then about 5 minutes later, I got a text, Nick, we're going to go another direction. So.
Yeah, listen, I've been down that road. This is off target, but it proves the point you're talking about. I got a call from someone who worked for the New York Times, and somehow he got a hold of my number, and he said, "Dave Hodges, Common Sense Show." I said, "Yes." He said, "I want to ask you some questions about the upcoming election." This is pre-2016 election, not very, like 10 days before, and I think it was just prior to the Hillary Clinton revelations with the bleaching. And he asked me some basic questions about my beliefs and why I'm doing what I'm doing and what's my background. And then he came to the question. And this is what they do to you all the time. Are you still going to call for a revolution if Trump doesn't win? Well, I've never said such a thing. And I told him right there, I said, "You know, I'm smart enough to have recorded this conversation because you're on speaker." And I said, "If you print that, I said, I will sue the hell out of you." And I never heard from the guy again, and they didn't run the story. But this is how they do business. If you don't give them their narrative, then they'll walk the other way.
I was going to be on a Fox affiliate some years ago when the Sandusky case was breaking. And I was contacted by an assistant prosecutor in Pennsylvania that knew the case pretty well. And her and I talked about it. And she felt like there was a network. And the district attorney, Roy Graykar, had vanished. And she felt like he was definitely murdered. So, although the media wants to tell us that he was, he was in a district attorney, and then he decided to get a new life. But anyway,
I know, I covered that story. I know exactly what you're talking about. From nowhere, this guy got
yeah.
pressured into something and then something happened to him. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You don't need to convince me on that. I covered that story. Yeah, the Sandusky thing, do you think it was related to Epstein interests?
I believe that there was probably a network there. According to this assistant DA that contacted me, she felt that there was a network there. And then you had Eddie Savitz, who was a buddy of Sandusky, who was a notorious pedophile. And I don't know for sure, but I would think Sandusky is being part of a network. I don't think that's out of bounds at all, given what I know about all this. But so I was going to be on this Fox affiliate, and the junior producer or assistant producer had read the Franklin scandal and said, and we talked, and she said, you would be the perfect guy to talk about Sandusky. And the producer went through my publisher and got my name. And I had about a 3-minute conversation with her. I remember exactly where I was at. And I had about a 3-minute conversation with her, in which she asked me some questions and I answered them cogently. And she told my publisher that I sounded incoherent. So she was canceling the interview. Now, people have accused me of a lot of things, but no one's ever accused me of being incoherent other than her.
She's a loss for words because somebody got to her. This is the bottom line. I want to take you right into the present. I feel terrible about Charlie Kirk, but here's the deal. We are 9 days past the assassination. The services are on Sunday. It's wall-to-wall coverage in the mainstream media, either for or against, and Fox has a love fest going on. Here's my question for you though. Is do you think this part of this is providing cover against the controversy with the Epstein list, that the reason they're keeping a story going for longer than they normally might?
That's a question I do not know, but at this point, nothing would surprise me. But I can't give you a definitive answer to that question.
Well, my feeling is, and I said this to somebody the other day, I said, eventually the Charlie Kirk coverage is going to calm down. And when it calms down, we need to bring the Epstein situation right into full force again. We need to start challenging people publicly to disclose what they know.
Well, it's interesting. Patel was before the House yesterday, and he was before the Senate the day before. And he was excoriated. I mean, excoriated.
Yeah, he was.
And as I said earlier, I mean, he sounded like a crackhead. His lies were so disingenuous. And then I was told that that's an insult to crackheads. But anyway, I saw those hearings, and it's so obvious. At one point, he says, the Epstein network.
I know, and yet there's no list. Okay, right.
So, and he, they want to maintain that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were the only perps, and that. And they molested 1,000 girls together. When we know absolutely, categorically, that that is false.
Have you ever had any of the evidence land on the square of members of the Supreme Court?
With the Franklin scandal, Clarence Thomas plays a role in the Franklin scandal. He was, I think, friends with Lawrence King, who was one of the pedophilic pimps
Right.
in the Franklin Network. And actually, when King was going down, he was an African American Republican, probably the fastest rising African American Republican in the 80s. And with King, the he was Thomas was interviewed by I think it was the Washington Times, and he even talked about King, and No one else was talking about King. I mean, those Republicans were fleeing King. And then, of course, there was a book written by Jane Mayer. It's called Strange Justice. And what Thomas had done to Anita Hill, he had done to at least 10 women. And actually, there was a woman that was going to testify. Her name was Angela Wright. She'd been subpoenaed to testify, so it would have been two against one. But then Biden lifted her subpoena. And this is what's strange. Clarence Thomas has done everything. His decisions are antithetical to everything that all the Democratic Party ideals. And yet, we know that Joe Biden let him on the Supreme Court. So you'd think that, like, the Democrats wouldn't even let him become dog catcher. And he's also, and he was saying, he was talking about porno stars with Anita Hill. And he lived around the corner when he was in DC from a video store. And he spent a lot of time in the adult section of that video store. So I think Clarence Thomas is a nasty piece of work. And so many of his decisions have declared war on just average Americans.
Yeah, interesting. Let me just share this with you briefly. Feel free to shoot it down. But when Scalia died so mysteriously, for example, you burn the body of a Roman Catholic without an autopsy. The stories I've been told, and I've gotten this from three sources, but I've left it alone for the most part because I can't verify it, but I wanted to see if you heard this. Scalia was on Roberts because Roberts was crossing the line and voting liberal many times on his decisions because he was compromised as a pedophile. And Scalia was supposedly going to expose him. And this is why Scalia had to be dealt with. Have you come across anything like that?
I have heard that about Roberts, but it's innuendo
Yeah,
and
exactly.
it's not solid enough. Now, Kavanaugh is kind of an interesting case. I tweeted someone tweeted that Kavanaugh, that the woman that was making allegations against Kavanaugh was not a paragon of truth.
Yeah, I remember.
And then I tweeted back, which woman? So people see what they want to see,
No,
as you
I
know.
hear you. But the reason I ask you this question is not for sensationalization purposes, but to indicate perhaps how widespread this is and how much undue influence this industry has on our politics.
Well, it's very important. If I was the CIA and I was into blackmailing people, it would be very important to have some Supreme Court justices in my pocket for sure.
Yeah, I that's that was my thinking too, but it's hard to get your arms around it. I will say this though. I covered the Scalia situation. His death was suspicious, found with a pillowcase over his face. And then, like I said, an autopsy of a Roman Catholic, not done. And then they burn his body. And the judge blocked access to investigative records. So I looked at it, I said, there's definitely something here. And this is what got my attention. If you just said Roberts and Scalia is going to blackmail him, I said, that's all nonsense. That's too far out there. But it was the suspiciousness of Scalia's death that really got me interested, but I couldn't prove it. Nick, before we let you go, I wanted to go back to some things you've done because people are going to want to follow you. And I know you've written some books. We mentioned the Franklin scandal, child abuse book. Talk a little bit about your work and then how people can follow you.
I've also written a book called Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail, in which I wrote it with Henry Vincent. And Henry ran the largest gay escort service that's ever been uncovered in Washington, DC. And CIA assets would use his gay escorts to compromise closeted politicians. And I've also written a book about Watergate. And at the heart of Watergate, as crazy as this sounds, but you can read the book. It's called The Truth About Watergate, A Tale of Extraordinary Lies and Liars. At the heart of Watergate is a CIA honey trap. And that seems to be seems to be where my expertise is.
Who
I
are they
didn't set out this.
compromising on that honey trap, Nick? Who are they compromising with
They were
Watergate?
compromising Democratic big shots that we know of, and the Watergate honey trap, yeah. And also, I think some judges too.
Was the break-in then not so much tied to getting bad records on a mentally ill vice presidential candidate, but more on blackmailing Democrats, do you think?
So if you were a Democratic big shot, you would go to a secretary at the DNC. Her name was Maxine Wells. And she would give you a folder which contained pictures of prostitutes. And the Democratic big shot would pick the prostitute that he wanted. And the brothel was run by Heidi Reichen and James McCord.
McCord.
Yeah, McCord was involved in it. And the brothel was very, very close to the Watergate. It was at upscale apartments called Columbia Plaza. And if you went and had a liaison in Columbia Plaza, you were blackmailed. Now we have this pinhole technology, but back then we did not have that kind of technology. So there had to be a guy in the closet, with a camera. And that's been an integral part of our political system. And I definitely had a tremendous amount of evidence that that honey trap existed. But my books can be edifying, but the most important thing that I'm working on right now is called Epstein Justice. And what we're shooting for with Epstein Justice is we want a con independent congressional commission, and we want two things answered. We want to know why the government covered up child trafficking, and we want to know, and we want the perpetrators to be prosecuted. Two very simple things. Now, it's not going to be easy, even though we want two very simple things. And I would suggest that the people listening to your podcast go to EpsteinJustice.com and register. And we hold webinars, and we're putting people together in by geographic regions. So that's very important. If we do not, it's pretty obvious to me that our government doesn't have the will to really uncover the Epstein case. I think that a lot of what we've seen in the last couple of days is a dog and pony show. And we need the people of the United States to step up. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 25% of underage girls and 5% of underage boys have been molested. And people in the field think it's slightly conservative for underage girls and very conservative for underage boys. There was a study that found 16%. But anyway,
I've come across that too. Yeah.
if we just go with the CDC numbers, there's over 50 million Americans that have been molested as minors. And not only do we need to make sure that our government doesn't cover up child abuse just for the sake of our government and for the sake of our republic, but if you're one of those 50 million people and you see this, a proven pedophile network, and nothing happens, you're going to think that you have no voice and no hope for justice. So it's very important that we as Americans address the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. And please visit our website, EpsteinJustice.com.
EpsteinJustice.com. Is that the best way for people to follow you?
Yes.
Okay. And you've got a treasure trove of books. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we can't let this die. I mean, Charlie Kirk's situation, we're going to move away from that eventually. But this problem is not going away. And I'm saying this directly to my audience, Nick. I think we all need to become involved. You know, nations judge by how it takes care of its most vulnerable. And if we're not willing to step up and protect our kids, maybe we don't deserve to have a nation. And that's where I stand with that. Nick, you've done tremendous work. You've been generous with your time and my audience. I truly appreciate you coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Great to see you, Dave.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, bye.